Barbary, for he would carry him off in spite of the whole Moorish host, as Don Gaiferos carried off his wife Melisendra.
"Remember, your worship," observed Sancho on hearing him say so, "Señor Don Gaiferos carried off his wife from the mainland, and took her to France by land, but in this case, if by any chance we carry off Don Gregorio, we have no way of bringing him to Spain, for there's the sea between."
"There's a remedy for everything except death," said Don Quixote. "If they bring the vessel close to the shore, we shall be able to get on board, though all the world strive to prevent us."
"Your worship hits it off mighty well and mighty easy," said Sancho. "But it's a long step from saying to doing, and I hold to the renegade, for he seems to be an honest, good-hearted fellow."
Don Antonio then said that if the renegade did not prove successful, the expedient of the great Don Quixote's expedition to Barbary should be adopted. 2 days afterwards, the renegade put to sea in a light vessel of 6 oars a side, manned by a stout crew, and 2 days later the galleys made sail eastward, the admiral having begged the viceroy to let him know all about the release of Don Gregorio and about Ana Félix, and the viceroy promised to do as he was requested. One morning, as Don Quixote went out for a stroll along the beach, arrayed in full armour, for, as he often said, that was his only gear, his only rest, the fray, and he never was without it for a moment, he saw coming towards him a knight, also in full armour, with a shining moon painted on his shield, who, on approaching sufficiently near to be heard, said in a loud voice, addressing himself to Don Quixote,
"Illustrious knight, and never sufficiently extolled Don Quixote of La Mancha, I am the Knight of the White Moon, whose unheard-of achievements will perhaps have recalled him to thy memory. I come to do battle with thee, and prove the might of thy arm, to the end that I make thee acknowledge and confess that my lady, let her be who she may, is incomparably fairer than thy Dulcinea del Toboso. If thou dost acknowledge this fairly and openly, thou shalt escape death and save me the trouble of inflicting it upon thee. If thou fightest and I vanquish thee, I demand no other satisfaction than that, laying aside arms and abstaining from going in quest of adventures, thou withdraw and betake thyself to thine own village for the space of a year, and live there without putting hand to sword, in peace and quiet and beneficial repose, the same being needful for the increase of thy substance and the salvation of thy soul. And if thou dost vanquish me, my head shall be at thy disposal, my arms and horse thy spoils, and the renown of my deeds transferred and added to thine. Consider which will be thy best course, and give me thy answer speedily, for this day is all the time I have for the dispatch of this business."
Don Quixote was amazed and astonished as well at the Knight of the White Moon's arrogance as at his reason for delivering the defiance. And with calm dignity he answered him,
"Knight of the White Moon, of whose achievements I have never heard until now, I will venture to swear you have never seen the illustrious Dulcinea, for had you seen her I know you would have taken care not to venture yourself upon this issue, because the sight would have removed all doubt from your mind that there ever has been or ever can be a beauty to be compared with hers. And so, not saying you lie, but merely that you are not correct in what you state, I accept your challenge with the conditions you have proposed, and at once, that the day you have fixed may not expire. And from your conditions I accept only that of the renown of your achievements being transferred to me, for I know not of what sort they are, nor what they may amount to. I am satisfied with my own, such as they be. Take, therefore, the side of the field you choose, and I will do the same. And to whom God shall give it, may Saint Peter add his blessing."
The Knight of the White Moon had been seen from the city, and it was told the viceroy how he was in conversation with Don Quixote. The viceroy, fancying it must be some fresh adventure got up by Don Antonio Moreno or some other gentleman of the city, hurried out at once to the beach accompanied by Don Antonio and several other gentlemen, just as Don Quixote was wheeling Rocinante round in order to take up the necessary distance. The viceroy upon this, seeing that the pair of them were evidently preparing to come to the charge, put himself between them, asking them what it was that led them to engage in combat all of a sudden in this way. The Knight of the White Moon replied that it was a question of precedence of beauty, and briefly told him what he had said to Don Quixote, and how the conditions of the defiance agreed upon both sides had been accepted. The viceroy went over to Don Antonio, and asked in a low voice, did he know who the Knight of the White Moon was, or was it some joke they were playing on Don Quixote? Don Antonio replied that he neither knew who he was, nor whether the defiance was in joke or in earnest. This answer left the viceroy in a state of perplexity, not knowing whether he ought to let the combat go on or not. But unable to persuade himself that it was anything but a joke, he fell back, saying,
"If there be no other way out of it, gallant knights, except to confess or die, and Don Quixote is inflexible and your worship of the White Moon still more so, in God's hand be it. Fall on."
He of the White Moon thanked the viceroy in courteous and well-chosen words for the permission he gave them, and so did Don Quixote, who then, commending himself with all his heart to heaven and to his Dulcinea, as was his custom on the eve of any combat that awaited him, proceeded to take a little more distance as he saw his antagonist was doing the same. Then, without blast of trumpet or other warlike instrument to give them the signal to charge, both at the same instant wheeled their horses, and he of the White Moon, being the swifter, met Don Quixote after having traversed two-thirds of the course, and there encountered him with such violence that, without touching him with his lance, for he held it high to all appearance purposely, he hurled Don Quixote and Rocinante to the earth, a perilous fall. He sprang upon him at once, and placing the lance over his visor, said to him,
"You are vanquished, sir knight, nay, dead, unless you admit the conditions of our defiance."
Don Quixote, bruised and stupefied, without raising his visor, said in a weak, feeble voice, as if he were speaking out of a tomb,
"Dulcinea del Toboso is the fairest woman in the world, and I the most unfortunate knight on earth. It is not fitting that this truth should suffer by my feebleness. Drive your lance home, sir knight, and take my life, since you have taken away my honour."
"That will I not, in sooth," said he of the White Moon. "Live the fame of the Lady Dulcinea's beauty undimmed as ever. All I require is that the great Don Quixote retire to his own home for a year, or for so long a time as shall by me be enjoined upon him as we agreed before engaging in this combat."
The viceroy, Don Antonio, and several others who were present heard all this, and heard, too, how Don Quixote replied that so long as nothing in prejudice of Dulcinea was demanded of him, he would observe all the rest like a true and loyal knight. The engagement given, he of the White Moon wheeled about, and making obeisance to the viceroy with a movement of the head, rode away into the city at a half-gallop. The viceroy bade Don Antonio hasten after him, and by some means or other find out who he was. They raised Don Quixote up, and uncovered his face, and found him pale and bathed with sweat. Rocinante, from the mere hard measure he had received, lay unable to stir for the present. Sancho, wholly dejected and woebegone, knew not what to say or do. He fancied that all was a dream, that the whole business was a piece of enchantment. Here was his master defeated, and bound not to take up arms for a year. He saw the light of the glory of his achievements obscured, the hopes of the promises lately made him swept away like smoke before the wind. Rocinante, he feared, was crippled for life, and his master's bones out of joint, though if he were only shaken out of his madness, it would be no small luck. In the end they carried him to the city in a hand-chair which the viceroy sent for, and thither the viceroy himself returned, eager to ascertain who this knight of the White Moon was who had left Don Quixote in such a sad plight.
Chapter 65. Wherein is made known who the knight of the White Moon was, likewise Don Gregorio's release and other events. Don Antonio Moreno followed the knight of the White Moon, and a number of boys followed him too, nay, pursued him, until they had him fairly housed in a hostel in the heart of the city. Don Antonio, eager to make his acquaintance, entered also. A squire came out to meet him and remove his armour, and he shut himself into a lower room, still attended by Don Antonio, whose bread would not bake until he had found out who he was. He of the White Moon, seeing then that the gentleman would not leave him, said,
"I know very well, señor, what you have come for. It is to find out who I am, and as there is no reason why I should conceal it from you, while my servant here is taking off my armour, I will tell you the true state of the case, without leaving out anything. You must know, señor, that I am called the Bachelor Samson Carrasco. I am of the same village as Don Quixote of La Mancha, whose craze and folly make all of us who know him feel pity for him, and I am one of those who have felt it most, and persuaded that his chance of recovery lay in quiet and keeping at home and in his own house, I hit upon a device for keeping him there. 3 months ago, therefore, I went out to meet him as a knight errant, under the assumed name of the Knight of the Mirrors, intending to engage him in combat and overcome him without hurting him, making it the condition of our combat that the vanquished should be at the disposal of the victor. What I meant to demand of him, for I regarded him as vanquished already, was that he should return to his own village and not leave it for a whole year, by which time he might be cured. But fate ordered it otherwise, for he vanquished me and unhorsed me, and so my plan failed. He went his way, and I came back conquered, covered with shame, and sorely bruised by my fall, which was a particularly dangerous one. But this did not quench my desire to meet him again and overcome him, as you have seen today. And as he is so scrupulous in his observance of the laws of knight-errantry, he will, no doubt, in order to keep his word, obey the injunction I have laid upon him. This, senor, is how the matter stands, and I have nothing more to tell you. I implore of you not to betray me or tell Don Quixote who I am, so that my honest endeavours may be successful, and that a man of excellent wits, were he only rid of the fooleries of chivalry, may get them back again. "Oh, senor," said Don Antonio, "may God forgive you the wrong you have done the whole world in trying to bring the most amusing madman in it back to his senses. Do you not see, senor, that the gain by Don Quixote's sanity can never equal the enjoyment his crazes give? But my belief is that all the senor bachelor's pains will be of no avail to bring a man so hopelessly cracked to his senses again, and if it were not uncharitable, I would say may Don Quixote never be cured, for by his recovery we lose not only his own drolleries, but his squire Sancho Panza's too, any one of which is enough to turn melancholy itself into merriment. However, I'll hold my peace and say nothing to him, and we'll see whether I am right in my suspicion that Senor Carrasco's efforts will be fruitless."
The bachelor replied that at all events the affair promised well, and he hoped for a happy result from it. And putting his services at Don Antonio's commands, he took his leave of him, and having had his armour packed at once upon a mule, he rode away from the city the same day on the horse he rode to battle, and returned to his own country without meeting any adventure calling for record in this veracious history. Don Antonio reported to the viceroy what Carrasco told him, and the viceroy was not very well pleased to hear it, for with Don Quixote's retirement there was an end to the amusement of all who knew anything of his mad doings. 6 days did Don Quixote keep his bed, dejected, melancholy, moody and out of sorts, brooding over the unhappy event of his defeat. Sancho strove to comfort him, and among other things he said to him, "Hold up your head, senor, and be of good cheer if you can, and give thanks to heaven that if you have had a tumble to the ground you have not come off with a broken rib. And as you know that where they give they take, and that there are not always flitches where there are pegs, a fig for the doctor, for there's no need of him to cure this ailment. Let us go home, and give over going about in search of adventures in strange lands and places. Rightly looked at, it is I that am the greater loser, though it is your worship that has had the worse usage. With the government I gave up all wish to be a governor again, but I did not give up all longing to be a count, and that will never come to pass if your worship gives up becoming a king by renouncing the calling of chivalry, and so my hopes are going to turn into smoke."
"Peace, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "Thou seest my suspension and retirement is not to exceed a year. I shall soon return to my honoured calling, and I shall not be at a loss for a kingdom to win and a county to bestow on thee."
"May God hear it and sin be deaf," said Sancho. "I have always heard say that a good hope is better than a bad holding."
As they were talking, Don Antonio came in, looking extremely pleased, and exclaiming,
"Reward me for my good news, Señor Don Quixote. Don Gregorio and the renegade who went for him have come ashore. Ashore, do I say? They are by this time in the viceroy's house, and will be here immediately."
Don Quixote cheered up a little and said,
"Of a truth, I am almost ready to say I should have been glad had it turned out just the other way, for it would have obliged me to cross over to Barbary, where, by the might of my arm, I should have restored to liberty not only Don Gregorio, but all the Christian captives there are in Barbary. But what am I saying, miserable being that I am? Am I not he that has been conquered? Am I not he that has been overthrown? Am I not he who must not take up arms for a year? Then what am I making professions for? What am I bragging about, when it is fitter for me to handle the distaff than the sword?"
"No more of that, senor," said Sancho. "Let the hen live, even though it be with her pip. Today for thee and tomorrow for me. In these affairs of encounters and wax one must not mind them.
for he that falls today may get up tomorrow, unless indeed he chooses to lie in bed, I mean, gives way to weakness and does not pluck up fresh spirit for fresh battles. Let your worship get up now to receive Don Gregorio, for the household seems to be in a bustle, and no doubt he has come by this time. And so it proved, for as soon as Don Gregorio and the renegade had given the viceroy an account of the voyage out and home, Don Gregorio, eager to see Anna Felix, came with the renegade to Don Antonio's house. When they carried him away from Algiers, he was in woman's dress. On board the vessel, however, he exchanged it for that of a captive who escaped with him. But in whatever dress he might be, he looked like one to be loved and served and esteemed, for he was surpassingly well favoured, and to judge by appearances some 17 or 18 years of age. Ricote and his daughter came out to welcome him, the father with tears, the daughter with bashfulness. They did not embrace each other, for where there is deep love there will never be overmuch boldness. Seen side by side, the comeliness of Don Gregorio and the beauty of Anna Felix were the admiration of all who were present. It was silence that spoke for the lovers at that moment, and their eyes were the tongues that declared their pure and happy feelings. The renegade explained the measures and means he had adopted to rescue Don Gregorio, and Don Gregorio at no great length, but in a few words, in which he showed that his intelligence was in advance of his years, described the peril and embarrassment he found himself in among the women with whom he had sojourned. To conclude, Ricote liberally recompensed and rewarded as well the renegade as the men who had rowed, and the renegade effected his readmission into the body of the church and was reconciled with it, and from a rotten limb became by penance and repentance a clean and sound one. 2 days later, the viceroy discussed with Don Antonio the steps they should take to enable Anna Felix and her father to stay in Spain, for it seemed to them there could be no objection to a daughter who was so good a Christian, and a father to all appearance so well disposed, remaining there. Don Antonio offered to arrange the matter at the capital, whither he was compelled to go on some other business, hinting that many a difficult affair was settled there with the help of favour and bribes.
"Nay," said Ricote, who was present during the conversation, "it will not do to rely upon favour or bribes, because with the great Don Bernardino de Velasco, Conde de Salazar, to whom His Majesty has entrusted our expulsion, neither entreaties nor promises, bribes nor appeals to compassion are of any use. For though it is true he mingles mercy with justice, still, seeing that the whole body of our nation is tainted and corrupt, he applies to it the cautery that burns rather than the salve that soothes. And thus, by prudence, sagacity, care, and the fear he inspires, he has borne on his mighty shoulders the weight of this great policy and carried it into effect, all our schemes and plots, importunities and wiles being ineffectual to blind his 100 Argus eyes, ever on the watch lest one of us should remain behind in concealment, and like a hidden root come in course of time to sprout and bear poisonous fruit in Spain, now cleansed and relieved of the fear in which our vast numbers kept it. Heroic resolve of the great Philip III, and unparalleled wisdom to have entrusted it to the said Don Bernardino de Velasco. At any rate, said Don Antonio, when I am there I will make all possible efforts, and let heaven do as pleases it best. Don Gregorio will come with me to relieve the anxiety which his parents must be suffering on account of his absence. Anna Felix will remain in my house with my wife, or in a monastery, and I know the viceroy will be glad that the worthy Ricote should stay with him until we see what terms I can make.
The viceroy agreed to all that was proposed, but Don Gregorio, on learning what had passed, declared he could not and would not on any account leave Anna Felix. However, as it was his purpose to go and see his parents and devise some way of returning for her, he fell in with the proposed arrangement. Anna Felix remained with Don Antonio's wife, and Ricote in the viceroy's house. The day for Don Antonio's departure came, and 2 days later that for Don Quixote's and Sancho's, for Don Quixote's fall did not suffer him to take the road sooner. There were tears and sighs, swoonings and sobs at the parting between Don Gregorio and Anna Felix. Ricote offered Don Gregorio 1,000 crowns if he would have them, but he would not take any save 5 which Don Antonio lent him, and he promised to repay at the capital. So the two of them took their departure, and Don Quixote and Sancho afterwards, as has been already said, Don Quixote without his armour and in travelling gear, and Sancho on foot, Dapple being loaded with the armour. Chapter 66, which treats of what he who reads will see, or what he who has it read to him will hear.
As he left Barcelona, Don Quixote turned gaze upon the spot where he had fallen.
"Here Troy was," said he. "Here my ill luck, not my cowardice, robbed me of all the glory I had won. Here fortune made me the victim of her caprices. Here the lustre of my achievements was dimmed. Here, in a word, fell my happiness, never to rise again."
"Señor," said Sancho on hearing this, "it is the part of brave hearts to be patient in adversity, just as much as to be glad in prosperity. I judge by myself, for if when I was a governor I was glad, now that I am a squire and on foot, I am not sad. And I have heard say that she whom commonly they call Fortune is a drunken, whimsical jade, and what is more, blind, and therefore neither sees what she does, nor knows whom she casts down, or whom she sets up."
"Thou art a great philosopher, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "Thou speakest very sensibly. I know not who taught thee. But I can tell thee there is no such thing as fortune in the world, nor does anything which takes place there, be it good or bad, come about by chance, but by the special preordination of heaven. And hence the common saying that each of us is the maker of his own fortune. I have been that of mine, but not with the proper amount of prudence, and my self-confidence has therefore made me pay dearly. For I ought to have reflected that Rocinante's feeble strength could not resist the mighty bulk of the Knight of the White Moon's horse. In a word, I ventured it. I did my best. I was overthrown. But though I lost my honour, I did not lose, nor can I lose, the virtue of keeping my word. When I was a knight-errant, daring and valiant, I supported my achievements by hand and deed. And now that I am a humble squire, I will support my words by keeping the promise I have given. Forward, then, Sancho, my friend. Let us go to keep the year of the novitiate in our own country, and in that seclusion we shall pick up fresh strength to return to the, by me never forgotten, calling of arms."
"Señor," returned Sancho, "travelling on foot is not such a pleasant thing that it makes me feel disposed or tempted to make long marches. Let us leave this armour hung up on some tree instead of someone that has been hanged, and then with me on Dapple's back and my feet off the ground, we will arrange the stages as your worship pleases to measure them out. But to suppose that I am going to travel on foot and make long ones is to suppose nonsense."
"Thou sayest well, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "Let my armour be hung up for a trophy, and under it or round it we will carve on the trees what was inscribed on the trophy of Roland's armour. These let none move who dareth not his might with Roland prove."
"That's the very thing," said Sancho. "And if it was not that we should feel the want of Rocinante on the road, it would be as well to leave him hung up too."
"And yet I had rather not have either him or the armour hung up," said Don Quixote, "that it may not be said, for good service a bad reward."
"Your worship is right," said Sancho, "for, as sensible people hold, the fault of the ass must not be laid on the pack-saddle. And as in this affair the fault is your worship's, punish yourself, and don't let your anger break out against the already battered and bloody armour, or the meekness of Rocinante, or the tenderness of my feet, trying to make them travel more than is reasonable." In converse of this sort the whole of that day went by, as did the four succeeding ones, without anything occurring to interrupt their journey. But on the fifth, as they entered a village, they found a great number of people at the door of an inn enjoying themselves, as it was a holiday. Upon Don Quixote's approach, a peasant called out,
"One of these two gentlemen who come here, and who don't know the parties, will tell us what we ought to do about our wager."
"That I will, certainly," said Don Quixote. "And according to the rights of the case, if I can manage to understand it."
"Well, here it is, worthy sir," said the peasant. "A man of this village, who is so fat that he weighs 20 stone, challenged another, a neighbour of his, who does not weigh more than 9, to run a race. The agreement was that they were to run a distance of 100 paces with equal weights. And when the challenger was asked how the weights were to be equalised, he said that the other, as he weighed 9 stone, should put 11 in iron on his back, and that in this way the 20 stone of the thin man would equal the 20 stone of the fat one."
"Not at all," exclaimed Sancho at once, before Don Quixote could answer. "It's for me, that only a few days ago left off being a governor and a judge, as all the world knows, to settle these doubtful questions and give an opinion in disputes of all sorts."
"Answer, in God's name, Sancho, my friend," said Don Quixote, "for I am not fit to give crumbs to a cat, my wits are so confused and upset.
With this permission, Sancho said to the peasants who stood clustered round him, waiting with open mouths for the decision to come from his,
"Brothers, what the fat man requires is not in reason, nor has it the shadow of justice in it. Because, if it be true, as they say, that the challenged may choose the weapons, the other has no right to choose such as will prevent and keep him from winning. My decision, therefore, is that the fat challenger prune, peel, thin, trim, and correct himself, and take 11 stone of his flesh off his body, here or there, as he pleases, and as suits him best. And being in this way reduced to 9 stone weight, he will make himself equal and even with 9 stone of his opponent, and they will be able to run on equal terms."
"By all that's good," said one of the peasants as he heard Sancho's decision. "But the gentleman has spoken like a saint, and given judgment like a canon. But I'll be bound the fat man won't part with an ounce of his flesh, not to say 11 stone.
"The best plan will be for them not to run," said another, "so that neither the thin man break down under the weight, nor the fat one strip himself of his flesh. Let half the wager be spent in wine, and let's take these gentlemen to the tavern where there's the best, and lay the cloak over me when it rains."
"I thank you, sirs," said Don Quixote, "but I cannot stop for an instant, for sad thoughts and unhappy circumstances force me to seem discourteous and to travel apace."
And spurring Rocinante, he pushed on, leaving them wondering at what they had seen and heard, at his own strange figure, and at the shrewdness of his servant, for such they took Sancho to be. And another of them observed,
"If the servant is so clever, what must the master be? I'll bet if they are going to Salamanca to study, they'll come to be chief justices of the court in a trice. For it's a mere joke, only to read and read, and good luck and favour, and before a man knows where he is, he finds himself with a staff in his hand or a mitre on his head."
That night master and man passed out in the fields in the open air, and the next day, as they were pursuing their journey, they saw coming towards them a man on foot with saddlebags at the neck, and a javelin or spiked staff in his hand, the very cut of a foot courier, who, as soon as he came close to Don Quixote, increased his pace and, half running, came up to him, and embracing his right thigh, for he could reach no higher, exclaimed with evident pleasure,
"Oh, Señor Don Quixote of La Mancha, what happiness it will be to the heart of my lord the duke when he knows your worship is coming back to his castle, for he is still there with my lady the duchess."
"I do not recognize you, friend," said Don Quixote, "nor do I know who you are, unless you tell me."
"I am Tosilos, my lord the duke's lackey, Señor Don Quixote," replied the courier. "He who refused to fight your worship about marrying the daughter of Doña Rodriguez."
"God bless me," exclaimed Don Quixote. "Is it possible that you are the one whom mine enemies, the enchanters, changed into the lackey you speak of, in order to rob me of the honour of that battle?"
"Nonsense, good sir," said the messenger. "There was no enchantment or transformation at all. I entered the lists just as much lackey Tosilos as I came out of them lackey Tosilos. I thought to marry without fighting, for the girl had taken my fancy. But my scheme had a very different result, for as soon as your worship had left the castle, my lord the duke had 100 strokes of the stick given me for having acted contrary to the orders he gave me before engaging in the combat. And the end of the whole affair is that the girl has become a nun, and Doña Rodriguez has gone back to Castile, and I am now on my way to Barcelona with a packet of letters for the viceroy which my master is sending him. If your worship would like a drop, sound though warm, I have a gourd here, full of the best, and some scraps of tronchon cheese that will serve as a provocative and wakener of your thirst, if so be it is asleep." "I take the offer," said Sancho, "and no more compliments about it. Pour out, good Tosilos, in spite of all the enchanters in the Indies."
"Thou art indeed the greatest glutton in the world, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "and the greatest booby on earth, not to be able to see that this courier is enchanted, and this Tosilos a sham one. Stop with him and take thy fill. I will go on slowly and wait for thee to come up with me."
The lackey laughed, unsheathed his gourd, unwalleted his scraps, and taking out a small loaf of bread, he and Sancho seated themselves on the green grass, and in peace and good fellowship finished off the contents of the saddlebags down to the bottom, so resolutely that they licked the wrapper of the letters, merely because it smelt of cheese. Said Tosilos to Sancho,
"Beyond a doubt, Sancho, my friend, this master of thine ought to be a madman."
"Ought?" said Sancho. "He owes no man anything. He pays for everything, particularly when the coin is madness. I see it plain enough, and I tell him so plain enough. But what's the use? Especially now that it is all over with him, for here he is, beaten by the Knight of the White Moon."
Tosilos begged him to explain what had happened him, but Sancho replied that it would not be good manners to leave his master waiting for him. and that some other day if they met there would be time enough for that. And then, getting up, after shaking his doublet and brushing the crumbs out of his beard, he drove Dapple on before him, and bidding adieu to Tosilos, left him, and rejoined his master, who was waiting for him under the shade of a tree. Chapter 67 Of the resolution Don Quixote formed to turn shepherd, and take to a life in the fields while the year for which he had given his word was running its course, with other events truly delectable and happy. If a multitude of reflections used to harass Don Quixote before he had been overthrown, a great many more harassed him since his fall. He was under the shade of a tree, as has been said, and there, like flies on honey, thoughts came crowding upon him and stinging him. Some of them turned upon the disenchantment of Dulcinea, others upon the life he was about to lead in his enforced retirement. Sancho came up and spoke in high praise of the generous disposition of the lackey Tosilos.
"Is it possible, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "that thou dost still think that he yonder is a real lackey? Apparently it has escaped thy memory that thou hast seen Dulcinea turned and transformed into a peasant wench, and the Knight of the Mirrors into the bachelor Carrasco, all the work of the enchanters that persecute me. But tell me now, didst thou ask this Tosilos, as thou callest him, what has become of Altisidora? Did she weep over my absence? Or has she already consigned to oblivion the love thoughts that used to afflict her when I was present?"
"The thoughts that I had," said Sancho, "were not such as to leave time for asking fool's questions. Body o' me, senor, is your worship in a condition now to inquire into other people's thoughts, above all love thoughts?"
"Look ye, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "there is a great difference between what is done out of love and what is done out of gratitude. A knight may very possibly be proof against love, but it is impossible, strictly speaking, for him to be ungrateful. Altisidora, to all appearance, loved me truly. She gave me the 3 kerchiefs thou knowest of. She wept at my departure, she cursed me, she abused me, casting shame to the winds, she bewailed herself in public. All signs that she adored me, for the wrath of lovers always ends in curses. I had no hopes to give her, nor treasures to offer her, for mine are given to Dulcinea, and the treasures of knights errant are like those of the fairies, illusory and deceptive. All I can give her is the place in my memory I keep for her. Without prejudice, however, to that which I hold devoted to Dulcinea, whom thou art wronging by thy remissness in whipping thyself and scourging that flesh, would that I saw it eaten by wolves, which would rather keep itself for the worms than for the relief of that poor lady."
"Senor," replied Sancho, "if the truth is to be told, I cannot persuade myself that the whipping of my backside has anything to do with the disenchantment of the enchanted. It is like saying, if your head aches, rub ointment on your knees. Or at any rate, I'll make bold to swear that in all the histories dealing with knight-errantry that your worship has read, you have never come across anybody disenchanted by whipping. But whether or no, I'll whip myself when I have a fancy for it, and the opportunity serves for scourging myself comfortably."
"God grant it," said Don Quixote, "and heaven give thee grace to take it to heart and own the obligation thou art under to help my lady, who is thine also, inasmuch as thou art mine."
As they pursued their journey, talking in this way, they came to the very same spot where they had been trampled on by the bulls. Don Quixote recognized it, and said he to Sancho,
"This is the meadow where we came upon those gay shepherdesses and gallant shepherds who were trying to revive and imitate the pastoral Arcadia there, an idea as novel as it was happy. In emulation whereof, if so be thou dost approve of it, Sancho, I would have ourselves turn shepherds. At any rate, for the time I have to live in retirement. I will buy some ewes and everything else requisite for the pastoral calling. And I, under the name of the shepherd Quixotes, and thou as the shepherd Panzino, we will roam the woods and groves and meadows, singing songs here, lamenting in elegies there, drinking of the crystal waters of the springs or limpid brooks or flowing rivers. The oaks will yield us their sweet fruit with bountiful hand, the trunks of the hard cork trees a seat, the willows shade, the roses perfume, the widespread meadows carpets tinted with 1,000 dyes. The clear, pure air will give us breath, the moon and stars lighten the darkness of the night for us. Song shall be our delight, lamenting our joy. Apollo will supply us with verses, and love with conceits whereby we shall make ourselves famed for ever, not only in this, but in ages to come."
"Egad," said Sancho,
but that sort of life squares, nay, corners with my notions. And what is more, the bachelor Samson Carrasco and Master Nicholas the Barber won't have well seen it before they'll want to follow it and turn shepherds along with us. And God grant it may not come into the curate's head to join the sheepfold, too. He's so jovial and fond of enjoying himself.
Thou art in the right of it, Sancho, said Don Quixote. And the bachelor Samson Carrasco, if he enters the pastoral fraternity, as no doubt he will, may call himself the shepherd Samsonino, or perhaps the shepherd Carrascon. Nicholas the barber may call himself Niculoso, as old Boscan formerly was called Nemoroso. As for the curate, I don't know what name we can fit to him, unless it be something derived from his title, and we call him the shepherd Curiambro. For the shepherdesses whose lovers we shall be, we can pick names as we would pears, and as my lady's name does just as well for a shepherdess's as for a princess's, I need not trouble myself to look for one that will suit her better. To thine, Sancho, thou canst give what name thou wilt.
I don't mean to give her any but Teresona, said Sancho, which will go well with her stoutness and with her own right name, as she is called Teresa. And then, when I sing her praises in my verses, I'll show how chaste my passion is, for I'm not going to look for better bread than ever came from wheat in other men's houses. It won't do for the curate to have a shepherdess, for the sake of good example, and if the bachelor chooses to have one, that's his lookout.
God bless me, Sancho, my friend, said Don Quixote. What a life we shall lead! What hoboys and Zamora bagpipes we shall hear! What tabors, timbrels, and fiddles! And then, if among all these different sorts of music that of the albogues is heard, almost all the pastoral instruments will be there.
What are albogues? Asked Sancho, for I never in my life heard tell of them or saw them.
Albogues, said Don Quixote, are brass plates like candlesticks that struck against one another on the hollow side make a noise which, if not very pleasing or harmonious, is not disagreeable, and accords very well with the rude notes of the bagpipe and tabor. The word albogue is Morisco, as are all those in our Spanish tongue that begin with al, for example, almohada, almorzar, alhombra, alguacil, alusema, almacen, alcancia, and others of the same sort, of which there are not many more. Our language has only three that are Morisco and end in I, which are borsegi, thakithami, and manavedi. Al-Eli and Al-Faki are seen to be Arabic, as well by the Al at the beginning, as that they end with I. I mention this, incidentally, the chance allusion to albogues having reminded me of it. And it will be of great assistance to us in the perfect practice of this calling, that I am something of a poet, as thou knowest, and that besides the bachelor Samson Carrasco is an accomplished one. Of the curate I say nothing, but I will wager he has some spice of the poet in him, and no doubt Master Nicholas too, for all barbers, or most of them, are guitar players and stringers of verses. I will bewail my separation. Thou shalt glorify thyself as a constant lover. The shepherd Carrascon will figure as a rejected one, and the curate Curiambro as whatever may please him best. And so all will go as gaily as heart could wish.
To this Sancho made answer, I am so unlucky, senor, that I am afraid the day will never come when I'll see myself at such a calling. Oh, what neat wooden spoons I'll make when I'm a shepherd! What messes, creams, garlands, pastoral odds and ends! And if they don't get me a name for wisdom, they'll not fail to get me one for ingenuity. My daughter Sanchica will bring us our dinner to the pasture. Oh, but stay. She's good-looking, and shepherds there are with more mischief than simplicity in them. I would not have her come for wool and go back shorn. Love-making and lawless desires are just as common in the fields as in the cities, and in shepherds' shanties as in royal palaces. Do away with the cause, you do away with the sin. If eyes don't see, hearts don't break, and better a clear escape than good men's prayers.
A truce to thy proverb, Sancho, exclaimed Don Quixote. Any one of those thou hast uttered would suffice to explain thy meaning. And many a time have I recommended thee not to be so lavish with proverbs, and to exercise some moderation in delivering them. But it seems to me it is only preaching in the desert. My mother beats me, and I go on with my tricks.
It seems to me, said Sancho, that your worship is like the common saying, said the frying pan to the kettle, get away, black breech. You chide me for uttering proverbs, and you string them in couples yourself.
Observe, Sancho, replied Don Quixote, I bring in proverbs to the purpose. and when I quote them they fit like a ring to the finger. Thou bringest them in by the head and shoulders, in such a way that thou dost drag them in rather than introduce them. If I am not mistaken, I have told thee already that proverbs are short maxims drawn from the experience and observation of our wise men of old. But the proverb that is not to the purpose is a piece of nonsense, not a maxim. But enough of this. As nightfall is drawing on, let us retire some little distance from the high road to pass the night. What is in store for us tomorrow, God knoweth.
They turned aside, and supped late and poorly, very much against Sancho's will, who turned over in his mind the hardships attendant upon knight-errantry in woods and forests, even though at times plenty presented itself in castles and houses, as at Don Diego de Miranda's, at the wedding of Camacho the Rich, and at Don Antonio Moreno's. He reflected, however, that it could not always be day, nor always night. And so that night he passed in sleeping, and his master in waking. Chapter 68 Of the Bristly Adventure That Befell Don Quixote. The night was somewhat dark, for though there was a moon in the sky, it was not in a quarter where she could be seen, for sometimes the Lady Diana goes on a stroll to the Antipodes, and leaves the mountains all black and the valleys in darkness. Don Quixote obeyed nature so far as to sleep his first sleep, but did not give way to the second, very different from Sancho, who never had any second, because with him sleep lasted from night till morning, wherein he showed what a sound constitution and few cares he had. Don Quixote's cares kept him restless, so much so that he awoke Sancho and said to him, "I am amazed, Sancho, at the unconcern of thy temperament. I believe thou art made of marble or hard brass, incapable of any emotion or feeling whatever. I lie awake while thou sleepest, I weep while thou singest, I am faint with fasting while thou art sluggish and torpid from pure repletion. It is the duty of good servants to share the sufferings and feel the sorrows of their masters, if it be only for the sake of appearances. See the calmness of the night, the solitude of the spot, inviting us to break our slumbers by a vigil of some sort. Arise as thou livest, and retire a little distance, and with a good heart and cheerful courage give thyself 300 or 400 lashes on account of Dulcinea's disenchantment score. And this I entreat of thee, making it a request, for I have no desire to come to grips with thee a second time, as I know thou hast a heavy hand. As soon as thou hast laid them on, we will pass the rest of the night, I singing my separation, thou thy constancy, making a beginning at once with the pastoral life we are to follow at our village."
"Señor," replied Sancho, "I'm no monk to get up out of the middle of my sleep and scourge myself, nor does it seem to me that one can pass from one extreme of the pain of whipping to the other of music. Will your worship let me sleep, and not worry me about whipping myself, or you'll make me swear never to touch a hair of my doublet, not to say my flesh?" "Oh, hard heart," said Don Quixote. "Oh, pitiless squire! Oh, bread ill bestowed and favours ill acknowledged, both those I have done thee and those I mean to do thee! Through me hast thou seen thyself a governor, and through me thou seest thyself in immediate expectation of being a count, or obtaining some other equivalent title, which I shall do when this year of our retirement is over, for, post tenebras spero lucem."
"I don't know what that is," said Sancho. "All I know is that so long as I am asleep, I have neither fear nor hope, trouble nor glory, and good luck betide him that invented sleep, the cloak that covers over all a man's thoughts, the food that removes hunger, the drink that drives away thirst, the fire that warms the cold that tempers the heat, and, to wind up with, the universal coin wherewith everything is bought, the weight and balance that makes the shepherd equal with the king and the fool with the wise man. Sleep, I have heard say, has only one fault, that it is like death, for between a sleeping man and a dead man there is very little difference."
"Never have I heard thee speak so elegantly as now, Sancho," said Don Quixote.
"And here I begin to see the truth of the proverb thou dost sometimes quote, 'Not with whom thou art bred, but with whom thou art fed.'"
"Ha, ha, by my life, master mine," said Sancho, "it's not I that am stringing proverbs now, for they drop in pairs from your worship's mouth faster than from mine. Only there is this difference between mine and yours, that yours are well-timed and mine are untimely. But anyhow, they're all proverbs."
At this point, they became aware of a harsh, indistinct noise that seemed to spread through all the valleys around. Don Quixote stood up and laid his hand upon his sword, and Sancho ensconced himself under Dapple and put the bundle of armour on one side of him and the ass's pack-saddle on the other, in fear and trembling as great as Don Quixote's perturbation. Each instant the noise increased and came nearer to the two terrified men, or at least to one, for as to the other his courage is known to all. The fact of the matter was that some men were taking above 600 pigs to sell at a fair, and were on their way with them at that hour, and so great was the noise they made and their grunting and blowing that they deafened the ears of Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, and they could not make out what it was. The widespread, grunting drove came on in a surging mass, and without showing any respect for Don Quixote's dignity or Sancho's, passed right over the pair of them, demolishing Sancho's entrenchments, and not only upsetting Don Quixote, but sweeping Rocinante off his feet into the bargain. And what with the trampling and the grunting, and the pace at which the unclean beasts went, pack-saddle, armour, Dapple, and Rocinante were left scattered on the ground, and Sancho and Don Quixote at their wits' end. Sancho got up as well as he could, and begged his master to give him his sword, saying he wanted to kill half a dozen of those dirty, unmannerly pigs, for he had by this time found out that that was what they were.
"Let them be, my friend," said Don Quixote. "This insult is the penalty of my sin. And it is the righteous chastisement of heaven that jackals should devour a vanquished knight, and wasps sting him, and pigs trample him underfoot."
"I suppose it is the chastisement of heaven, too," said Sancho, "that flies should prick the squires of vanquished knights, and lice eat them, and hunger assail them. If we squires were the sons of the knights we serve, or their very near relations, it would be no wonder if the penalty of their misdeeds overtook us, even to the fourth generation. But what have the Panzas to do with the Quixotes?"
"Well, well, let's lie down again and sleep out what little of the night there's left, and God will send us dawn and we shall be all right."
"Sleep thou, Sancho," returned Don Quixote, "for thou wast born to sleep as I was born to watch. And during the time it now wants of dawn, I will give a loose rein to my thoughts and seek a vent for them in a little madrigal which, unknown to thee, I composed in my head last night."
"I should think," said Sancho, "that the thoughts that allow one to make verses cannot be of great consequence. Let your worship string verses as much as you like, and I'll sleep as much as I can." And forthwith, taking the space of ground he required, he muffled himself up and fell into a sound sleep, undisturbed by bond, debt, or trouble of any sort. Don Quixote propped up against the trunk of a beech or a cork tree, for Cide Hamete does not specify what kind of tree it was, sang in this strain to the accompaniment of his own sighs.
"When in my mind I muse, O love, upon thy cruelty, to death I flee, in hope therein the end of all to find. But drawing near that welcome haven in my sea of woe, such joy I know that life revives, and still I linger here. Thus life doth slay, and death again to life restoreth me. Strange destiny, that deals with life and death as with a play."
He accompanied each verse with many sighs and not a few tears, just like one whose heart was pierced with grief at his defeat and his separation from Dulcinea. And now daylight came, and the sun smote Sancho on the eyes with his beams. He awoke, roused himself up, shook himself, and stretched his lazy limbs, and seeing the havoc the pigs had made with his stores, he cursed the drove and more besides. Then the pair resumed their journey, and as evening closed in they saw coming towards them some 10 men on horseback and 4 or 5 on foot. Don Quixote's heart beat quick, and Sancho's quailed with fear, for the persons approaching them carried lances and shields, and were in very warlike guise. Don Quixote turned to Sancho and said,
"If I could make use of my weapons, and my promise had not tied my hands, I would count this host that comes against us but cakes and fancy bread. But perhaps it may prove something different from what we apprehend."
The men on horseback now came up, and raising their lances surrounded Don Quixote in silence, and pointed them at his back and breast, menacing him with death. One of those on foot, putting his finger to his lips as a sign to him to be silent, seized Rocinante's bridle and drew him out of the road, and the others, driving Sancho and Dapple before them, and all maintaining a strange silence, followed in the steps of the one who led Don Quixote. The latter 2 or 3 times attempted to ask where they were taking him to and what they wanted, but the instant he began to open his lips they threatened to close them with the points of their lances, and Sancho fared the same way, for the moment he seemed about to speak, one of those on foot punched him with a goad, and Dapple likewise, as if he too wanted to talk. Night set in, they quickened their pace, and the fears of the two prisoners grew greater, especially as they heard themselves assailed with,
"Get on, ye troglodytes! Silence, ye barbarians! March, ye cannibals! No murmuring, ye Scythians! Don't open your eyes, ye murderous Polyphemes, ye bloodthirsty lions!"
and such like names, with which their captors harassed the ears of the wretched master and man. Sancho went along saying to himself, "We? Tortolites? Barbers? Animals? I don't like those names at all. It's in a bad wind our corn is being winnowed. Misfortune comes upon us all at once like sticks on a dog. And God grant it may be no worse than them that this unlucky adventure has in store for us." Don Quixote rode completely dazed, unable with the aid of all his wits to make out what could be the meaning of these abusive names they called them, and the only conclusion he could arrive at was that there was no good to be hoped for, and much evil to be feared. And now, about an hour after midnight, they reached a castle which Don Quixote saw at once was the Duke's, where they had been but a short time before. "God bless me," said he, as he recognized the mansion. "What does this mean? It is all courtesy and politeness in this house. But with the vanquished, good turns into evil, and evil into worse." They entered the chief court of the castle, and found it prepared and fitted up in a style that added to their amazement and doubled their fears, as will be seen in the following chapter. Chapter 69 Of the Strangest and Most Extraordinary Adventure That Befell Don Quixote in the Whole Course of This Great History. The horsemen dismounted, and together with the men on foot, without a moment's delay taking up Sancho and Don Quixote bodily, they carried them into the court, all round which near 100 torches fixed in sockets were burning, besides above 500 lamps in the corridors, so that in spite of the night, which was somewhat dark, the want of daylight could not be perceived. In the middle of the court was a catafalque, raised about 2 yards above the ground, and covered completely by an immense canopy of black velvet. And on the steps all round it, white wax tapers burned in more than 100 silver candlesticks. Upon the catafalque was seen the dead body of a damsel so lovely that by her beauty she made death itself look beautiful. She lay with her head resting upon a cushion of brocade, and crowned with a garland of sweet-smelling flowers of divers sorts, her hands crossed upon her bosom, and between them a branch of yellow palm of victory. On one side of the court was erected a stage, where upon 2 chairs were seated 2 persons who, from having crowns on their heads and sceptres in their hands, appeared to be kings of some sort, whether real or mock ones. By the side of this stage, which was reached by steps, were 2 other chairs on which the men carrying the prisoners seated Don Quixote and Sancho, all in silence, and by signs giving them to understand that they too were to be silent, which, however, they would have been without any signs, for their amazement at all they saw held them tongue-tied. And now 2 persons of distinction, who were at once recognized by Don Quixote as his hosts, the Duke and Duchess, ascended the stage attended by a numerous suite, and seated themselves on 2 gorgeous chairs close to the 2 kings, as they seemed to be. Who would not have been amazed at this? Nor was this all, for Don Quixote had perceived that the dead body on the catafalque was that of the fair Altisidora. As the Duke and Duchess mounted the stage, Don Quixote and Sancho rose and made them a profound obeisance, which they returned by bowing their heads slightly. At this moment an official crossed over, and approaching Sancho threw over him a robe of black buckram, painted all over with flames of fire, and taking off his cap, put upon his head a mitre such as those undergoing the sentence of the Holy Inquisition wear, and whispered in his ear that he must not open his lips or they would put a gag upon him or take his life. Sancho surveyed himself from head to foot and saw himself all ablaze with flames, but as they did not burn him, he did not care 2 farthings for them. He took off the mitre, and seeing it painted with devils, he put it on again, saying to himself, "Well, so far those don't burn me, nor do these carry me off." Don Quixote surveyed him too, and though fear had got the better of his faculties, he could not help smiling to see the figure Sancho presented. And now, from underneath the catafalque, so it seemed, there rose a low, sweet sound of flutes, which, coming unbroken by human voice, for there silence itself kept silence, had a soft and languishing effect. Then, beside the pillow of what seemed to be the dead body, suddenly appeared a fair youth in Roman habit, who, to the accompaniment of a harp which he himself played, sang in a sweet and clear voice these two stanzas. While fair Altisidora, who the sport of cold Don Quixote's cruelty hath been, returns to life, and in this magic court the dames in sables come to grace the scene, and while her matrons all in seemly sort my lady robes in bays and bombazine, her beauty and her sorrows will I sing, with defter quill than touched the Thracian string. But not in life alone, methinks, to me belongs the office. Lady, when my tongue is cold in death, believe me, unto thee my voice shall raise its tributary song. My soul from this strait prison-house set free, as o'er the Stygian lake it floats along, thy praises singing still shall hold its way, and make the waters of oblivion stay. At this point, one of the two that looked like kings exclaimed, "Enough! Enough, divine singer! It would be an endless task to put before us now the death and the charms of the peerless Altisidora, not dead as the ignorant world imagines, but living in the voice of fame and in the penance which Sancho Panza, here present, has to undergo to restore her to the long-lost light. Do thou, therefore, O Rhadamanthus, who sittest in judgment with me in the murky caverns of Dis, as thou knowest all that the inscrutable fates have decreed touching the resuscitation of this damsel, announce and declare it at once, that the happiness we look forward to from her restoration be no longer deferred." No sooner had Minos, the fellow judge of Rhadamanthus, said this, than Rhadamanthus, rising up, said,
"Ho! Officials of this house, high and low, great and small, make haste hither, one and all, and print on Sancho's face 24 smacks, and give him 12 pinches and 6 pin-thrusts in the back and arms, for upon this ceremony depends the restoration of Altisidora."
On hearing this, Sancho broke silence and cried out, "By all that's good, I'll as soon let my face be smacked or handled as turn more. Body o' me, what has the handling of my face got to do with the resurrection of this damsel? The old woman took kindly to the taste, and now her mouth waters. They enchant Dulcinea and whip me in order to disenchant her. I may as well raise my broad end and waken her with a gun. Altisidora dies of ailments. God was pleased to send her, and to bring her to life again they must give me 24 smacks and prick holes in my body with pins and raise wheels on my arms with pinches. Try those jokes on a brother-in-law. I'm an old dog and won't be fooled by a crust."
"Thou shalt die," said Rhadamanthus in a loud voice. "Relent, thou tiger. Humble thyself, proud Nimrod. Suffer and be silent, for no impossibilities are asked of thee. It is not for thee to inquire into the difficulties in this matter. Smacked thou must be, pricked thou shalt see thyself, and with pinches thou must be made to howl. Oh, I say, officials, obey my orders, or by the word of an honest man ye shall see what ye are born for."
At this, some 6 duennas, advancing across the court, made their appearance in procession, one after the other, 4 of them with spectacles, and all with their right hands uplifted, showing 4 fingers of wrist to make their hands look longer, as is the fashion nowadays. No sooner had Sancho caught sight of them than, bellowing like a bull, he exclaimed,
"I might let myself be handled by all the world, but allow duennas to touch me? Not a bit of it! Scratch my face as my master was served in this very castle. Run me through the body with burnished daggers, pinch my arms with red-hot pincers. I'll bear it all in patience to serve these gentlefolk, but I won't let duennas touch me, though the devil should carry me off."
Here Don Quixote, too, broke silence, saying to Sancho, "Have patience, my son, and gratify these noble persons, and give all thanks to heaven that it has infused such virtue into thy person, that by its sufferings thou canst disenchant the enchanted and restore to life the dead." The duennas were now close to Sancho, and he, having become more tractable and reasonable, settling himself well in his chair, presented his face and beard to the first, who delivered him a smack very stoutly laid on, and then made him a low curtsy.
"Less politeness and less paint, Senora Duenna," said Sancho. "By God, your hands smell of vinegar wash."
In fine, all the duennas smacked him, and several others of the household pinched him, but what he could not stand was being pricked by the pins. And so, apparently out of patience, he started up out of his chair, and seizing a lighted torch that stood near him, fell upon the duennas and the whole set of his tormentors, exclaiming,
Begone, ye ministers of hell! My backside's not made of brass not to feel such out-of-the-way tortures!"
At this instant, Altisidora, who probably was tired of having been so long lying on her back, turned on her side, seeing which all the bystanders cried,